You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
The NBA? Where's the Speaker of the House? That's what I want to know. Where's the Speaker of the House condemning 43 law enforcement officers who have been murdered? Are their names on the back of any jerseys? Or is that just for preening and posturing by the true privilege to play sports for a living? These are real people.
October the 8th, 2020. Those are the words of Texas Congressman Roy, speaking on the House floor last month. His issue, police deaths are being ignored, absolutely ignored. Not a matter of saying there aren't some cases where police have acted out of order, but when police are also killed, they're getting nothing, basically. Now, we're going to get into that a little bit later. Yes, I know there's another debate last night. We're going to break all that down for you as well. But you should also know that the point he raised about wearing names and the BLM on the gridiron and on the basketball court and on the baseball field, that might be changing next year as far as the NBA is concerned. Their numbers are way down. No one can say specifically it's because of this. The issue about wearing BLM or personal messages, so forth, on the court are the jerseys. But the facts are the facts as far as the numbers are being down. And in an interview with ESPN's Rachel Nichols ahead of Game 4 of the NBA Finals in Florida, the NBA Commissioner Adam Silver made this statement.
I would say in terms of the messages you see on our court on the jerseys, this was an extraordinary moment in time when we began the discussions with the players and what we all lived through this summer. My sense is there'll be somewhat of a return to normalcy, that those messages will largely be left to be delivered off the floor. And I understand those people who are saying, I'm on your side, but I want to watch a basketball game.
And I think that's where many Americans have been coming down, regardless of their color or their interest on this issue at all. They're there to watch a sport, period. Do the messaging, whatever you want elsewhere, but when we come to the sport, can we just play the game? I mean, the players are out there doing their game. They don't take some stop at the moment to stop again to remember someone. They play the game. That's what they're paid to do. That's what fans pay their money for. We're going to get into that in more detail in the next hour. But it also, the main concern involves the war on cops. That's the real issue, as far as in addition to the concerns about, be they black, brown, yellow, or white lives, unnecessarily shot and killed by police in a case where they did not exercise proper judgment and or excessive lethal force. All right, the debate last night. As I said, we're going to get into it. Yeah, you had Harris and Pence going at it. Some interesting things that came out of it. Did anyone really win? My answer is no, not really. But we'll get Dr. Lamero to join us a little bit later in this program today with his view and take on it. Now, the biggest news that's going on now references the next presidential debate. That's 7 days from now, October the 15th, to be held in Miami. Since President Trump had been diagnosed and treated at Walter Reed Hospital for COVID, the commission has now decided that they will not be appearing on stage together, that they will appear virtual. Biden will be in one location staring into a camera, Trump in another location staring into a camera. And they're insisting that's the way to do it to keep them safe. Apparently, Biden had said, I don't know about going and debating the guy face up if he's still possibly contagious. And Trump says, I'm not going to do a virtual debate. Who's winning, who's losing on this battle? And is it a commission gift for Biden to propose this, knowing that Trump is saying, I'm not going to do it? Or will Trump change his mind? Well, that's always possible, isn't it? We've got a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. We'll get into the debate, and we're also going to have a guest focusing on Second Amendment gun rights and what the Democrats plan to do if they do win everything. Win everything. Another reason for you to make sure you vote. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Businesses, restaurants, nursing homes need to be free of COVID. So you should be contacting Wellington Environmental. A professionally trained team will disinfect your facility using powerful but safe disinfectants. And here's something new. Wellington has a line of foggers that you can use to disinfect your own facility. These foggers are in high demand, but Wellington Environmental has some for now. They cost about $500. But my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. You save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional disinfecting, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality and lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
There's no place to hide down here. No place to hide down here. To the rock, got on my knees. I heard the angels weep for me. No place to hide down here.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
We want a debate that is lively, but Americans also deserve a discussion that is civil. These are tumultuous times, but we can and will have a respectful exchange about the big issues facing our nation. The two campaigns and the Commission on Presidential Debates have agreed to the ground rules for tonight. I'm here to enforce them on behalf of the millions of Americans who are watching. One note, no one in either campaign or at the Commission or anywhere else has been told in advance what topics I'll raise or what questions I'll ask.
Those statements from the moderator for last night's debate on the vice presidential candidates should be something you should just assume that neither side was given inside information. You should just assume that it should be done properly, fairly. Why did she have a need to do that? Let me take you back to the Hillary Clinton campaign. Former Democratic National Committee Interim Chair Don Brazil, who had been with CNN, and is now employed by Fox as an analyst, and I cannot understand, given that woman who's admitted she lied, tried to frame the debate and help Hillary during a debate that she's moderating, that she is still employed in this business. But then again, I'm looking at this business, aside from this show, I'm talking about true news business, as impartial and doing the facts. This show is not meant to be that way, obviously. These are opinions of mine and opinions of yours as well and others. I'm not trying to do a balancing act on facts on this program. I did that for decades as a news anchor, but here I can say and do what I want, and I do. But Donna Brazile, as a moderator for the debate, working with CNN at that time, admitted what she did. She wrote in an essay for Time magazine that, yeah, she did share potential topics for a CNN town hall with the Clinton campaign in her role as Democrat operative and the DNC vice chair. I said she was a moderator. I meant that she had gotten the message to Clinton in advance of the debate as to what was going to happen. At that time, she was clearly Democrat operative, DNC vice chair. And she said, her quote, "My job was to make all our Democrat candidates look good." Now, remember, that was Hillary going against Bernie at the time. "And I worked closely with both campaigns to make that happen. But sending those emails was a mistake I will forever regret." In other words, she absolutely acknowledged that she sent information to Hillary Clinton about what she would be asked in Flint, Michigan, letting Hillary know that there's a woman in Flint, Michigan that might be asking about the death penalty at that point, or rather asking about the Flint, Michigan water, and another separate town hall, someone would be asking about the death penalty. She basically gave her the questions in advance. So when you hear the moderator make that statement last night, you're thinking, why would you even have to do that? Well, you shouldn't have to. But it did, and of course, that's where the fight started. That's where the fight started, that once you start, okay, take the gloves off, go at it. So let's go through some of the topics and issues that we saw come out last night, and then we'll refocus on what's going to happen with the next debate, the presidential debate, scheduled the 15th of this month. The first issue they were presented with was COVID.
The American people have witnessed what is the greatest failure of any presidential administration in the history of our country. And here are the facts. 210,000 dead people in our country in just the last several months. Over 7 million people who have contracted this disease. 1 in 5 businesses closed. We're looking at frontline workers who have been treated like sacrificial workers.
You know, at that time, while she was making that statement, you had Pence kind of shaking his head. No, that's not true. We didn't treat them as sacrificial workers. But he held his tongue, and she got her full 2 minutes. The format called for that. Each candidate would get 2 minutes uninterrupted and 2 minutes only. Of course, they're going to slop over a little bit. But anytime Pence went over, he was immediately assailed. If Kamala went over, it just kind of lagged on and lagged on until finally they tried to put a stop to it. Anyway, they do their 2 minutes, and they were supposed to go to 6 minutes discussion for each. So here you had Harris condemning the Trump administration and therefore Pence for failing to fight and deal with COVID properly and putting health workers at the front line as experimental workers. Basic, sacrificial, her words. All right, let me give you a response, from Vice President Pence.
I want the American people to know that from the very first day, President Donald Trump has put the health of America first. Before, there were more than 5 cases in the United States, all people who had returned from China. President Donald Trump did what no other American president had ever done. And that was he suspended all travel from China, the second largest economy in the world. Now, Senator Joe Biden opposed that decision. He said it was xenophobic and hysterical. But I can tell you, having led the White House Coronavirus Task Force, that that decision alone by President Trump, the mobilization since World War II, and I believe it saved hundreds of thousands of American lives.
Now, if you're counting seconds, yes, Pence got about 20 seconds more on the response I played for you than I allowed Harris, but her point was quick, succinct, and Pence did get off track a little bit, and I did not have time to make sure we edited it a little tighter. I've always said in the business, if I have more time, I can make it shorter. But we just had to make a decision. Cut bait, I should say, or fish, so we had to get it on the air. Now, There were many other issues that were brought up. One of the issues, obviously critical at this point, in addition to COVID, is the Supreme Court nomination coming up. And we know the Democrats are fighting against it, although one leading Democrat is now admitting we don't have any way to stop it. We can't stop it. It's going to happen anyway. But we have also heard the Democrats say that they will pack the court if they get a chance to get back in control. If they can get in control, and they will start adding members to the Supreme Court to make sure more Democrats are in there than conservative viewpoints. And it shouldn't be for either side, conservative or liberal, but constitutional. What does the Constitution say? Be an originalist. Stick with what it says. You're not to rewrite it. You're not to form law by it, and you being a Supreme Court member, but simply follow the Constitution until someone comes forward and we get an amendment to change something you don't like or add to it with an amendment. That's the process. But despite several times from Pence, she said, Pence had said, I think the American people deserve an answer, Senator Harris. Are you and Democrat presidential candidate Joe Biden going to pack the court if Judge Amy Coney Barrett is confirmed? The answer? She did not answer it directly. Instead, started giving a story about President Abraham Lincoln declining to nominate a Supreme Court member during an election year. She dodged it then. She dodged a little bit later. No answer. There is no answer. You won't find an answer. You will find a dodge and a duck. The same thing actually came up when it came to the New Green Deal, whether the Biden administration is going to back the Green New Deal that Bernie signed on with Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and that Biden was supposedly all about. But then when he was questioned recently, during that first debate, the response from Biden was, I am the Democrat Party now. And that deal is not my deal. So that brought up the issue again last night. And so for Senator Harris talking about the issue of fracking, that if you put a ban on fracking, how it could hurt the economy. Here's what she says that the Biden-Harris campaign ticket stands for.
The Vice President mentioned you co-sponsored the Green New Deal in Congress, but Vice President Biden said in last week's debate that he does not support the Green New Deal. But if you look at the Biden-Harris campaign website, it describes the Green New Deal as a crucial framework. What exactly would be the stance of a Biden-Harris administration toward the Green New Deal? You have 2 minutes uninterrupted.
Sure. So first of all, I will repeat, and the American people know, that Joe Biden will not ban fracking. That is a fact.
That is a fact. That's her answer. And from then on, you don't really get an answer. But she insisted, we will not ban fracking. That is a fact. Vice President Pence said that's an opportunity to charge.
Senator Harris, you're entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. You yourself said on multiple occasions when you were running for president that you would ban fracking. Joe Biden looked at a supporter in the eye and pointed and said, I guarantee that we will abolish fossil fuels. They have a $2 trillion version of the Green New Deal, Susan, that your newspaper, USA Today, said really wasn't that very different from the original Green New Deal. More taxes, more regulation, banning fracking.
And on another issue, Pence accused Harris and Biden of being a cheerleader for communist China, specifically Biden. And Harris just smiled and said, no, that's not true either. Then they got into the tax cuts as to who's going to cut taxes, who's going to raise the taxes. Harris insisting Joe Biden has been very clear he will not raise taxes on anyone who makes less than $400,000 a year. Pence responded, Joe Biden said twice in the debate last week he's going to repeal the Trump tax cuts that gave the average working family a $2,000 tax break every single year. Harris, That's absolutely not true. And so it went. Did we get any real substance out of the debate? Or is it more show and tell as to how you can respond and maintain decorum if you want? Or maybe get over the line if you choose to. When you start looking at some of the questions that were raised and some that weren't, well, you could say maybe we hold those questions for the presidential debate next. Which brings us to the issue again. This next presidential debate, is it going to be happening on October the 15th? And if so, is it going to be virtual? Trump says he will not participate in it. And if Trump backs out, does that make give Biden an excuse to not have another debate? Or do some say that Trump will he won't give up any opportunity to get on screen, so he'll do it anyway. He may end up doing it. Well, Dr. Lemire will join us in the second hour to get into more details of that. But after we come back from this break, let me look a little closer at something that happened last night in the vice presidential debate and how it's being judged. And I'm going to give you the viewpoint from the liberals. I always want to balance. Might as well hear exactly how they think the debate went, as if you don't know.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me excitations.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So let me give you the debate take from from the New York Times by their writer David Lindhardt, who does this morning documentation every day. And he begins saying, Mike Pence and Kamala Harris are both skilled debaters, and their debate last night was far easier to watch than last week's presidential debate. But there was also a problem with the vice presidential debate. Pence repeatedly made statements that were either misleading or true. I'll also point out to you, I'll step aside from the New York Times take at this point, that ABC News also did, quote, fact-checking. But the only fact-checking they did involved Pence, not Harris. Now, the writer for the New York Times goes on and says that rather than laying out honest disagreements with Harris and Joe Biden, be they on tax policy, abortion, policing, immigration, environment, or any other number of issues, Pence misrepresented the Trump administration's record and Biden's. To be clear, he says, both Pence and Harris also engaged in mild overstatement and rhetorical flourishes at times. That's normal in politics. So, see, that's not a misstatement. That's not a wrong fact. That's a flourish, a rhetorical flourish, a mild overstatement. And then he says, Harris, for example, exaggerated the job losses that President Trump's trade war with China has caused. You knew, of course, if you go to a particular source, if it's not truly being an unbiased source, you're going to get takes like that. You should not be twisted and turning over such remarks if you don't agree with them. There were those, a analysis for Fox, one of their analysts, said that many thought that Harris was too condescending and maybe too abrasive and just not the way she should be. Well, of course, anytime a woman is up against a man in a debate, then it always comes down to, well, how's he going to treat her? How's she going to respond? And also to that extent, you got ABC's George Stephanopoulos suggesting that Pence was mansplaining. That's basically where a man spreads his legs really wide and part moves a woman off to the side, only doing it with words as opposed to physical action. And again, it's a perspective. You have your own as to if it is or isn't that way. But one thing that Pence brought up that the mainstream media really wanted to ignore when they were talking about the Biden plan for dealing with coronavirus, he said it reads a lot like what Trump and I have been doing every step of the way. He said it looks a little bit more like plagiarism, something Joe Biden knows a little bit about. You know what he's talking about, don't you? When Biden was running for president in 1987, during an event at the Iowa State Fair, Biden lifted entire portions of a speech from a British politician who had challenged Margaret Thatcher. The New York Times gets credit for uncovering it at that point. Of course, that was 1987. Pointing out that Biden, quote, lifted the speech with phrases, gestures, and lyrical Welsh syntax intact for his own closing speech at a debate at the Iowa State Fair. In other words, plagiarism, not acknowledging who wrote it, but acting like it's all his, even with the Welsh accent. All right, we'll take a break. I've got a guest coming up that knows a lot about the fight to preserve your Second Amendment rights and the fight to take them away. It's coming up. Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Welcome back. My guest is a first time on the program, John Richard Lott, Jr., American economist, political commentator, gun rights advocate, and, of course, is pushing your Second Amendment rights to be protected. He's written numerous articles for both academic and other publications, authored books such as More Guns, Less Crime, The Bias Against Guns, and now a new one coming out, Gun Control Myths, How Politicians, the Media, and Botched Studies Had Twisted the Facts on Gun Control. John, welcome aboard, sir.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Well, let's jump right into the issue. When you talk about the gun control myths, let's deal first with the political side. The Democrats, on one hand, I don't see a myth. I see them being very clear what they would want to do if they have their right. Even Hillary, the last time around, when running, acknowledged, well, the Second Amendment isn't exactly what you think it says. I'll let you take it from there.
Right. Well, I mean, one just has to look at the Joe Biden website to go and see what they want to go and do on guns. His number one proposal would be to make it so that whenever a gun is used improperly, gun makers and gun sellers would be able to be sued and be civilly liable. I mean, we're not talking about product liability cases. We're not talking about cases where the gun makers or gun sellers engaged in illegal action, such as selling a gun to a criminal or not doing a background check or something like that. Let me give you an analogy. Let's say you were to apply that to cars. There are 4.5 million people each year who require medical attention because of car accidents. Should all those 4.5 million people sue car makers and car sellers for lost wages, for medical costs, for pain and suffering that they might have? What do you think that would do to the car industry? What do you think would happen, you know, all the deaths that occur, the 40,000 deaths that occur? What about the lawsuits that they could have when cars are used in commission of crimes, such as driving to the crime or a getaway car that's there? I mean, there wouldn't be a car industry anymore.
Well, they'd be they would be happy with that, to not have a gun industry. I mean, they would be very happy to have no gun industry.
Right, but it's just one example of just the first proposal that they have there that would essentially put the gun makers and sellers completely out of business.
Well, the other thing that, let's run down very quickly another myth that every time I hear it, I just absolutely get incensed. They start talking about an AR-15 as a weapon of war, and that it's an automatic weapon, and we have automatic pistols and automatic rifles all over the nation. A flat-out lie. Go ahead, sir.
Right. Well, you know, the vast majority of guns owned in the United States are semi-automatic guns. The ones that they call assault weapons or weapons of war, military weapons, aren't really military weapons. There's no military in the world that uses these civilian versions of these guns that are semi-automatic. You know, they want to ban the guns based on how they look. If they want to go and ban all semi-automatic guns, at least that there would be some logic there. But to ban, you know, they often will sometimes refer to these as military style.
Right.
Well, the key word is style there. It's just saying cosmetically, you know, for whatever reason, some people like guns that on the outside look like military weapons. So
it might not be any more than a .22 shell. I mean, it's not, it's not even a hunting rifle capability.
I mean, look, they fire the same bullets, do the same damage at the same rapidity as a semi-automatic hunting rifle. And, you know, we tried an assault weapons ban back in 94 to 2004. You know, there's been lots of academic research that hasn't found any beneficial impact on crime. At in 2003, the last full year that they had this assault weapons ban, in effect, the murder rate was 5.7 per 100,000. Now it's 5 per 100,000.
You're listening.
It went down.
You're listening to John Lott, the author of a new book, Gun Control Myths. So let's take away from the guns for a moment. Well, we're going to come back to them and the laws regarding them. But magazine capacity, that's the next big argument.
Right. Well, you know, I don't think these people know what a magazine is. A magazine is a box with a spring in it. It's incredibly, it's probably the simplest part of the gun. I've seen people being able to put together magazines from scratch, basically, with a few simple machine tools in like 2 minutes. The notion that you're going to be able to stop criminals from getting magazines just isn't serious.
What about the high capacity issue?
Well, I mean, the same thing there. I mean, it's still a box. It's just a longer box with a spring in it. And, you know, so, and what you end up doing is basically you're going to be making it more difficult for law-abiding citizens to defend themselves. You know, you have almost 20 million concealed carry permit holders in the United States. When you have a concealed carry permit holder, the only magazine that they take with them is going to be the magazine that's in their handgun. They don't carry around extra magazines there. But somebody who's going to go and do an attack, even if you were to effectively limit the size of each of their magazines, would go and take multiple magazines with them if they're going to do a mass public shooting or something.
All right.
What you've only done is you've limited the ability for law-abiding citizens to go and stop it.
Now, that brings us again to this issue about, you know, police officers in schools, we need less police on the street, less guns. And yet every time there's some violent crime going down, folks call for help. They call for somebody with a gun to put an end to it. Otherwise, it probably will not end.
No, I mean, we're living in a really strange time. You know, what we've been having this year, police have been ordered to stand down. You've had police budgets being cut in many places. You've had district attorneys in St. Louis and other places refusing to file charges against the people, the rioters that the police arrest, and they've only been arresting the most egregious cases. We've had jails across the country, you know, from Chicago to Los Angeles to San Francisco to New York that had been releasing anything from a third to a half of the inmates that had been in the jails there. You've had, you know, a kind of a perfect storm in terms of increasing crime.
We have calls for more and more laws. I'm looking right now, once again, out of Chicago, violence, gun violence in Chicago, leaving 14 shot, 2 fatal within a 24-hour period, one of the cities that has one of the toughest gun laws in the nation.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's an easy way to explain what's happening, what happens in terms of violence in terms of Chicago. Only 20% of murders result in an arrest. And you have, in the rate that they prosecute them is relatively low, particularly for gang murders that are there. And, you know, nationwide, you're talking about over 70% of murders result in arrest. So it's 20% there. If you rarely arrest people, and then particularly for gang violence, you rarely arrest them and even, you know, you rarely prosecute them. You know, you're talking about something that's not much different than 10% of these guys may end up in jail.
But that's not what they're interested in.
Big surprise.
Yeah, and they're not interested in that. They want more gun control laws as opposed to enforcing what we already have.
Can I just give you a simple example?
Sure.
I mean, you look at Minneapolis, where they have voted to completely defund the police. They want to replace the police with social workers. Here we had a city where they ordered the police to stand down for days during the riots that were there. The city council, though, has voted to go and provide armed private security for city council members.
Right.
They're spending $7,000 per week per city council person who wants to have the protection to have armed private security there. You know, they understand then the benefit of having guns to protect themselves. But they're not going and offering the, you know, minorities who live in these high crime parts of Minneapolis a voucher for them to go and hire armed security. They're disarming the police that are there on top of it.
It's the same story. It's the same story we get all the time from the left, that you need to give up your gun, but yes, I need my protection. That's why we have the moats and massive gates around the Hollywood elite homes, and that they have their private guards. But you just have to fend for yourself, and you don't need a gun.
Well, Lisa Milano, the actress who has been leading a number of these demonstrations to defund the police, she recently had a situation where she thought that there was a criminal by her home.
Yeah.
And she frantically called up 911 demanding that the police be there instantly. I mean, it turned out that there wasn't a threat, that she was just kind of imagining.
It was a kid with a BB gun, if I remember right.
Right.
I mean, but she didn't know anything between a BB gun and the other. Now, very quickly, in the last 30 seconds here, I want to talk again. Your book title again is Gun Control Myths. In the last 30 seconds, how big of a deal is gun control, Second Amendment rights going to be for many Americans going into this election?
Well, I think this election will determine the future of gun ownership. It's not just like the law that we talked about earlier, which would effectively put gun makers out of business. It's also the courts. You know, Biden has promised to put judges and justices on the courts that would go and overturn the Heller and the McDonald decisions. The only thing that those Supreme Court decisions did was said that the government could not completely ban all guns or an entire category of guns like all handguns or all rifles.
All right, thanks, John.
You know, they're talking about packing the court,
yeah.
And they would be able to easily overturn that, and that would allow the government to ban guns.
They would do it. John, I want to thank you again for your time. The book is Gun Control Myths, John R. Lott, Jr. John, again, thanks for joining us. We'll look forward to having you back in the future, sir. We'll be right back. Please stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
We have in the blue states more and more folks getting incensed and upset and angry and looking for a way out. New York State is the biggest example we have in front of us, but there are others. And look what's going on in some of these blue states run by blue governors and blue leadership. California is, of course, one of them as well. Let me give you an example of what they just did in California that will have some folks saying, I got to get out of here. Not only do they want to raise taxes over and over again, and they want to defund police, but they're going to let criminals back out on the street. Immigration and Customs Enforcement had 125 criminal illegal aliens, including those convicted of murder. Not charged, convicted of murder. They either had criminal convictions, 95% of them, or pending charges for crimes such as homicide, sexual assault, child sex crimes, aggravated assault, battery, domestic abuse, firearms violations. And what happened? The sanctuary state of California set them free. From September 18th to October 3rd, in an operation called Operation Rise, ICE agents arresting these 125 illegals I was just telling you about. And immediately the state of California set them free, even as ICE was requesting turn them over to us. One of them, a 40-year-old national of El Salvador, arrested in L.A., September 29, convicted by the Los Angeles Superior Court of first-degree murder in November 2009. They had an immigration detainer lodged with the L.A. County Jail. The jail declined to honor the detainer and instead released him. ICE was able to pick him up. Again, these are folks that California already been setting free. Now ICE, through this Operation Rise, has him back in custody working on removing him. Another 50-year-old, illegal from Mexico, arrested in Long Beach, convicted again, conspiracy to commit second-degree murder. And California was going to set him free and would not turn him over to ICE when his sentence was up. They were going to let him roam through the countryside again. And then you look at what's going on as well in New York. And in New York, this state is seeing the largest outflow of residents than any state. And a lot of it now tied, in this case, not so much to crime, the higher taxes, which we know are there, but also happening during the coronavirus pandemic. So you're going to have to decide what's the real reason. Moving requests from New York City, 52% above the national average, 52%. That's New York City. The most recent numbers on New York City showed it went down a little bit, but New York State still was seeing many flee. If you go back to California, in San Francisco, and again, we're talking about taxes, the way the government's run, the intent to put more taxes on you, more restrictions, not doing anything to help people, all the homeless issue, the crime in the streets, turning illegals loose even after they know that they're here illegally, serving as, quote, sanctuary cities, protecting everyone but the taxpaying citizens. In San Francisco, outbound requests 128% above the national at the start of September. Now, I told you how New York State during the coronavirus pandemic had lost more. But if you look at it overall, you find that it's surpassed by Washington, D.C., that recorded more outbound moves. And who's behind them? California, Nevada, Oregon, Delaware. And the most inbound moves, well, if folks are still trying to stay somewhere in the New York area, you can expect you'd find some nearby, but like Connecticut. But generally, they're moving to Vermont, North Dakota, Montana, Michigan. And United Van Lines, which is a good way to track some of this as a moving company, says Florida is also remaining a top destination for those wanting to get the hell out of the Northeast. And their traffic in September was up 10%, going from New York City to Florida just as of September. We have people wanting to move for numerous reasons, sometimes personal, but sometimes fear, or the economy, and taxes, or a combination thereof. Folks want to be where they can earn the best money, obviously. But if every dollar you're getting is being hacked to pieces by state and local taxes, you're thinking, why am I putting that effort into it? Why can't I go somewhere else? And where I also have a better chance of having good police protection if I need it, and not some area that's defunding police. We're going to get into the next hour, the war on cops. Yes, it's real and it exists. And also, the commissioner of the NBA says there will be changes on the court next year. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.